Welcome to The Central Question, a podcast that explores the craft of creative nonfiction, hosted by Sean Prentice and Jessica Hendry Nelson. We're the co-authors of Advanced Creative Nonfiction, a writer's guide and anthology from Bloomsbury Publishing. In each episode, we interview an author from the textbook's anthology to examine the craft strategies involved in the making of their essay. Thanks for joining us as we explore the central questions of creative nonfiction.
Today, we talk amongst ourselves about Chapter 12, Phenomenal Truths. As usual, Anna Clara McGrath, our producer and a recent MFA graduate, joins this discussion.
So Sean, this chapter was dreamed up by you. So do you want to tell us the chapter's origin story, the impulse to write it, what prompted you to put this in the book? And what do you think, in your mind, is this chapter's central question?
Yeah, of course, Jess. It's great to talk to you two today. And so for this chapter, as you probably well remember, I think it was the early 2000s, there was all these memoirs that were getting called out for being fictional or having invented parts, including A Million Little Pieces. And that was right when I was in grad school. And I started thinking more and more about this idea of truth and fact and memory. And just where the gray line is and where maybe a black line is between truth and invention. But what I realized is I just had no idea about how memory worked and how we could access truth through our memory. So I did a whole bunch of research, and you can see a bunch of it in this chapter, or at least the results of it. And I looked into eyewitnesses, and we see that over 50% of eyewitness accounts are wrong, and they should be theoretically right, because the most important memories in our lives are seared into our brains, but often they're seared into our brains incorrectly. The other thing is that memory works in this weird way where it's like an etch-a-sketch, where if I were to ask you to draw a picture of your book on an etch-a-sketch, you draw it, and then I grab it from you, and I shake it, and I say, draw it again, and you draw what you think is the same picture of your book. And then I shake it again, and then I ask you again. And each one of those is a completely different image that's your best effort to recreate your book on an etch-a-sketch. And that's how our memory works. It's really like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where we take a memory, we remember it. And what that remembering does is it erases all previous ones. So as a quick example of this, if the three of us keep remembering this podcast conversation, each one of us will diverge and go in a different direction as we remember different parts. And then there's the forgetting curve, which I learned about. And this is kind of woven right into this. The most important memories are seared into our brains, even if they're seared in incorrectly. But then the brain also purges almost all the information it gets. So in a few days, if this podcast didn't do enough to make us remember it, we're going to start forgetting it. And it starts again within 3 days. And this is why you forget so many things that you were supposed to remember in school, because your brain didn't think they were valuable enough. And your brain saves space for the stuff that's going to keep it alive physically and emotionally. And the rest of the stuff just starts getting jettisoned. So there's the forgetting curve that we're dealing with. And what all of this led me to realize is that creative nonfiction writers have no ability to get at any real truth. We can, of course, bring in fact. But those are going to be post-event, so we might be able to look up things. But really what we're doing is maybe at best getting at an emotional truth, but even that emotional truth is a later emotional truth. It's how we feel about the event at the time of the writing, not at the time of the event, and it's going to wildly diverge. So it made me realize that what we do in creative nonfiction has nothing to do with true fact or true truth, and instead is our best effort at telling, you know, what I might say is the myth of our lives. And that to me is the central question. It's, can we tell real true stories? What is the contract? And it's, no, we cannot, but that doesn't mean we should not try our best.
Right, and that's maybe where I wanna take this conversation next is, you know, why do we do it then? You know, why is the effort still worth it? You know, knowing that a kind of empirical truth is impossible, why do we still essay? And I don't know if you see, or Sean, if you guys have thoughts about that. I mean, I know I do, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
AC, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know. I think that the way that we remember is just as important as like what actually happened, right? I guess. I mean, I think that the way that I, you know, if I'm thinking about like, there's this legendary story in my family about how my mom's pet cockatiel Bilko died when she was a kid, and everyone, like my aunt and my grandparents when they were alive, had different stories of like how the bird died. And it was always somebody else's fault in the family, that like somebody else was like left the cage open and then the bird. And I think that like that narrative of like my family trying to reconcile with like what happened to the bird is almost, if not more interesting than like what actually happened to the bird, which is probably not actually that interesting. Probably someone left the cage open and the bird died. But like, just like the story of like this family, like how they remember and why they think it's important is interesting to me, maybe.
Right, right. I mean, I suppose that's the emotional truth, right? Who believes what is the narrative, and why they believe it is the narrative, right? Which is far more interesting than probably what actually happened to this poor bird.
Yeah, I know, I'm saying it in such a cold way. I'm just like, this bird.
I mean, so, you know, to play devil's advocate, one could say that why don't we just all write fiction then, or poetry, or throw this idea of veracity out the window altogether. You know, what is important about this attempt? And of course, we know essay, it's almost cliche to say it anymore, but essay means, you know, to try, to examine, to try. You know, why this attempt to write quote unquote true narratives, which is really at the heart of this chapter too, about what truth is and why we're interested in it.
Well, and for me, the reason why, it would be like saying, well, why wrestle with the emotional moments of your life in your real life? Why not just invent something new? And you know, my parents did not actually get divorced. I can now invent something new. Or I did not lose that job, or I did not get broken up with, and let me just invent something new that happened. I'm still in that relationship or whatever. And that's just invention, and that does not work in our real lives. And the reason we write creative nonfiction, at least for me, is it's about survival, emotional and physical survival. It's started out with, how do we survive these wars? How do we survive these droughts? How do we survive these animal attacks? And now it's mostly about how we survive emotionally. So even if we're not telling the true event, even if we're not getting the facts as right as we could, even if we're merely telling our myths, it helps us figure out how to survive what we think is most important to us, what we think our stories are.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking lately that this idea of truth, the concept of truth, is the container, truths that are actually more significant. In other words, you know, we need to wed ourselves to this idea of empirical truth. We have to believe in it in order to puzzle our way toward something that matters more for our survival now. Would you guys agree with that or disagree with it? I mean, I think that there's still, what I'm saying is, I think that there's still a role for the concept of actual truths, even while we must acknowledge that they don't in fact exist in memory.
I think I would agree. I mean, I think that like, I think sort of the flip side to what I said, or the part of what I said about sort of like what matters is what is interesting, is that you end up in that kind of like, you know, post-fact, like political, I don't know how political I'm allowed to get on this podcast, but you know, you end up in this kind of world that like of sort of like nothing matters, and so it's just as true. And I think, you know, particularly like I don't know, I think like we're, that gets into sort of dangerous territory, that gets into sort of like troubling stuff if you're not actually, if the truth doesn't matter at all, then that's pretty bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, politics
essay, you know, there's it's all about narrative. It's all about the story we tell ourselves, right? And so, you know, particularly for nonfiction writers, creative nonfiction writers, you know, it's like any sort of spiritual system through which we organize our lives. You know, this idea of truth could be akin to God. It could be akin to whatever sort of higher power, right? It's, you know, it could be akin to Santa Claus. We have to believe in its possibility. And parts of it are as real as anything can be real, right? God, someone's concept of God could be as real as anything, right? Because we believe it, because we believe in it, and it then becomes the system through which we organize our emotional lives, our emotional and intellectual lives that sustain us. And so, you know, I guess more evidence that writing is in a sense a kind of spiritual practice, even if we don't always think of it as such. So I guess that goes back to the idea of the definitions, AC. So do you want to talk about your question about the definitions in this chapter?
Yeah, I was going to point out, I think there are a lot of definitions in this chapter. There's some Kant in this chapter about the of phenomenal truths. So I was wondering about why these definitions are so important and why they're so necessary for this chapter.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to weave in what we just talked about with definitions, because Jess, you were talking about God or Santa Claus. And this will get into an idea that the chapter ends with, which is that we don't tell our truths, we tell our personal myths. And for me, this is something that's really important, even if we don't have to keep it at the front of our brains. Because if we look at the definition of say, truth or fact, and then we look at how memory works, we realize that we really can't access those two. So then we get to AC's idea, like, okay, do we go to a post-truth? And I would argue, please, 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 no. Because then we're not writing creative nonfiction, we're writing fiction, which is great, but it's not our genre. So we need to stay away from this idea of post-truth. And we need to do that because this is maybe where definitions come in. Again, we can't get to truth or fact, but what can we get to? And I think, again, about your talk, Jess, about Santa Claus or God. And I always use the example of Zeus on Mount Olympus throwing down lightning bolts. And if you were to ask, or if I were to ask you two, if that was a real event, you two would say no. But if I were to ask the Greeks, there's a good chance they would say yes. And what we have to veer towards is telling what I call personal myths. And a myth, the definition of that, is a story that a culture believes to be completely true, while the outside cultures recognize it's probably either not true or only partially true. And so for me, it's this idea of about personal myths, which are myths that we believe are completely true. And we do all the research, all the digging we can, we talk to other people to see if we're getting at the closest possible version. But then the outside culture, our readers, recognize that maybe what they're getting is something that is less than true and more myth, but they also recognize that the writer is trying their best to get to the truth. So that leads into definitions. If we know what truth and fact and myth are, if we understand where their meanings came from and how we use them, then what we can get is we can get a better understanding of what we're actually going for. And this helps in a couple of ways. One is it helps us as writers because we know what we're doing and we know what we're aiming toward. And it helps our readers, I think, a ton because they get a better contract. They understand what they're supposed to be doing. When I write Finding Abby or Crosscut, are you getting the truth? No, but you're getting my personal myth. And that's the story that I think is right, that I think is true. Using my research, but also recognizing that the forgetting curve, that the way memory gets seared into our brain, eyewitness accounts, all that skews it. So you get this conglomerate memory that's the best I can do, but is not completely true. So for me, definitions matter because if we don't know what we're talking about, we get sloppy. And those ideas right there, if we don't know what we're talking about and get sloppy, they come from Judith Kitchen, who proposed that we need a set of definitions. And if you go to our website, you'll find a slew of definitions and even a taxonomy where we lump together like-minded terms. And this is just a first generation, but our hope is right now we're pretty sloppy in creative nonfiction with our definitions. And this is an attempt to be less sloppy based on Judith Kitchen's call to action.
Right. And that too, Sean, I think it might be useful to talk about the veracity scale, which is something we introduced earlier in the textbook, but relates here, you know, and that, you know, we reference a veracity scale rather than this sort of binary, this truth binary. I think, you know, something is either true or it is false. And we encourage writers to think of their work as existing on, you know, a veracity scale. Why was that important? And, you know, in your first conception of this chapter, why did it feel important to call attention to a veracity scale rather than a true false binary?
Well, for a couple of reasons. One, chapter two deals a lot with this as well. But Jess, you actually said something earlier on, which I found so interesting when we were talking about, I think it was maybe around the post-truth idea. Why not just write fiction? But then you also added, why not just write poetry? And there is an implication that I think we all have that poetry is either invented or unknown. And that doesn't need to be the case. There's no reason we can't write creative nonfiction in any form. So chapter two really gets into how we want to separate truth from form. Creative nonfiction does not need to be prose. And so if we separate form or genre, prose, poetry, and drama from truthfulness, veracity, then we have a lot more freedom. But beyond that, the veracity scale just says, on one side is fact and on the other side is complete invention. And we don't write on either side of those. No one does. Where we write is somewhere a little bit inside of those, all the way to the center. And we need to just be more clear that we are not writing facts and we are probably not writing truths. We are writing those myths. But then a lot of writers are writing something less than myths and more like inventions. And there's some sort of blend. And the more clear we are with this movement on the veracity scale, the more we have room to write and the more we have a clear contract, we get more leeway to say where we are and then more leeway to do what we want and less worry about getting called out because we're not writing those absolute truths and facts. And we still need to be clear. This does not give us leeway to just say anything we want, but it gives us leeway to move where we want to be on that veracity scale. So Jess, in chapter 12, we say that the term creative comes from the word to invent. And so that all creative writing is on some level inventing or creating or even completely fiction. And I'm wondering, Jess, how you figure out how to stay on the truth and fact side of the veracity line.
Right, that's a good question. And it's something that I think is an evolving relationship between every writer and their work. And it's, you know, I think we make a pact with the reader. And that pact says something like, essentially, you know, I will try to the best of my ability to tell this experience as I experienced it. More importantly, you know, for essayists, often, you know, we're interested in the way the mind works. We're interested in not necessarily how I feel, but also how I think. And so, you know, that once we get into the realm of ideas and thoughts and essay, you know, there's less confusion. But when we're rendering experience, you know, I do my best to stay as close to the truth as possible. And, you know, there's a kind of dialectical movement that we can do when we move into something that's invented or into territory where we just don't remember. And that can be a meaning-making space as significant as, you know, things that we feel more certain about. And so I try to do that. When I'm not sure on the page, I try to say, I'm not sure. And then to examine that, why don't I remember? Why do I remember what I remember? You know, why don't I remember what I don't remember? And that is its own kind of meaning-making space. You know, the phenomenal truths that we're interested in creative nonfiction are a collective kind of truth. They're the truth of experience, the truth of emotions, which is always much more, in some ways ambiguous, but also more holistic, because it includes my truth, it includes somebody else's truth, you know, and it tries to reckon with all of that. And that to me is a much more interesting meaning-making tool than this kind of didactic idea of a singular truth. So, you know, and I try to remember too, and this is something I always, you know, try to impress upon students early in the semester, but, you know, art is artifice. It is all a construction. It is not the thing itself, you know? And so by necessity, we cannot, you know, render experience in its truest form. We just can't. All we have are the traces. All we have, you know, are these sort of collective, individual truths, and trying to, you know, render them in a cohesive, meaningful way is the most significant and also all we can do. So I don't know, that's how I think about it. I think I'd love to hear, AC, what you think about this, because, you know, you started really as a fiction writer and then, you know, moved and opened up into creative nonfiction. So how has your relationship to these ideas evolved as you started studying and then writing creative nonfiction?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I, similar to what you're saying, I have found that, like, when I started reading more creative nonfiction, that it's the creative nonfiction that does exactly what you're saying, that calls attention to sort of like the unreliability of the narrator, that really like is the creative nonfiction that gets me almost the most excited. And I think about if people know the graphic memoir Fun Home by Alison Bechdel, that comic book. The sequel to that, Are You My Mother, has this like great, great moment that I love so much, where she's telling a story and like you have the whole story. And then the next panel, there's this like panel where her mom is reading the comic that she just wrote. And she's like, no, that's not how it happened, Allison. You're getting all of this wrong. And it's like my favorite thing ever. Like, it just like makes me so happy. Because I think that like there is something about like saying I don't know, and saying like, and exactly what you're saying, I think like, why is it that I don't know? And why is it that I'm like, or like, why is it that I'm like tempted to tell this story this one way, when actually like, I'm not sure, is I think really like one of the ways that nonfiction is interesting and like worth pursuing, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And what I'm thinking about here is, I'm thinking about writing prompts. And if you want to try something fun, tell a story in one way with one narrative, and then tell the exact same story, but with a different central question, and see how it changes. Then tell it from someone else's point of view and see how it changes. And there is no one story. And like you were saying, art is artifice. Everything is a phenomenal truth. It's not a noumenal truth, to go back to one of our definitions. And that's the beauty of creative nonfiction for me, is that it's how we see an event and why we see it and why we have to tell that story in that way.
Thanks so much for joining us as we explore the central questions of creative nonfiction. Please rate and review The Central Question, and feel free to follow Sean and Jess at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Have a great day and keep essaying.